Welcome back. You're listening to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. My name is Bob Russell. I'm your host today. I'm joined in the studio, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime, Mr. John Jurisic. And joining us...
Emphasize the crime part.
Okay, yes, emphasize thank you. The crime part. And joining us now in the studio, as she will on a regular basis, is she with the most politically convenient name in the world, Victoria City Councillor and community activist, Lisa Helps. Thanks for coming in, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's an honor.
Well, you heard that, John?
That's what
honor.
You say now.
Yeah. Okay, exactly.
Well, I've sat through one of these, and I still came back. So.
That's amazing.
Okay, well, you know, as I promised in the introduction to today's show, we're going to talk about politics, politics, politics. Some of you may have thought that we'd forgotten about it, but we haven't. Summer's over. Sorry, it's true. Labor Day has passed, and the political season is upon us. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's going to be dominating the political agendas in the next year. And starting nationally, last Tuesday, there was an election in the province of Quebec. The Parti Québécois ended up forming a minority government while polling fewer votes than it had in the two previous elections that it lost.
Electoral reform, anyone?
Oh, yes. And or maybe just better choices. Of course, the media leading up to the election and afterwards were all a Twitter, if I can use that expression. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I mean, they're separatists and everything else like that. And, you know, doing what the media tend to do, which is try to create a problem, try to create a controversy. There is some it's beyond speculation, and one could say that, you know, given that, you know, Mr. Harper is not in an election year right now, it's quite possible that matters related to Quebec could dominate the national agenda. Would you agree? How do you see this playing
out? So you really want to go here, eh? You want to do this politics thing with us.
Exactly.
Do you?
I even want to do it with you, John. I even want to do it with
All
you.
Right, here we go. Okay. Who cares?
Okay.
Short of the province separating, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
Okay, I'll tell you
tell
why.
You why. Tell me why. That's okay. What people say to me.
Okay, I'll tell
who
you.
Who cares? Quebec election? I'm sorry.
I'll tell
love
you
them. What. Love them. Love them. They're part of Canada.
Yeah.
Why should I care?
Okay, I'll tell you why.
All right.
You know, during the election campaign, and I think I mentioned this to you, I did a review of some, you know, fairly consequential international publications, Financial Times of London, Economist, Wall Street Journal, Barron's. You know, this is a, you know, how we're perceived internationally is of some relevance to this country, given particularly, you know, how dependent we are on foreign investment, given the, you know, we don't have the biggest capital markets in the world, and that certainly has a business slant to it. And I went in and I looked at, okay, you know, we've had an election recently in Ontario, our largest province. We've also had an election recently in Alberta. You know, I think a lot of people internationally have heard of Alberta. And, you know, and now we have an election in Quebec. Let's go in and do a little count of how many articles there are in these publications. And it wasn't even close. I mean...
You mean articles on Quebec far outweighed any other election?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, you know what I think in answer to your question is Quebec going to dominate the national agenda? I think that two things. If there were no Enbridge and if there were no faltering world economy, and, you know, that's still how I see it, mm-hmm. then Quebec would dominate. It would mm-hmm. be, something for Canadians to get in a flap about. But I think Canadians already have something to get in a flap about, and I think that's what's going to dominate. I think mm-hmm. it's going to be very interesting for Mulcair to negotiate mm-hmm. His relationship with Quebec mm-hmm. And the Parti Québécois. But I think that I don't think it's going to dominate the national agenda. In a way, it would if there were no other big ticket items already out there in the public domain.
Well, I agree with you, but I'll take it a step further. I'll say that I think there's a real opportunity here, and you know, they say you should never say that separatism is dead, and that's true. But there is a chance every once in a while to put it to bed.
Yes,
and Mr. Harper has a wonderful opportunity to do precisely that. You know. The first thing is that, you know, his government, this majority government that we have now in Canada, is the first and only majority government in Canadian history. that does not have significant representation from Quebec. And he can maintain that government and even increase his majority without winning another seat in Quebec.
Mm-hmm, that's interesting.
So much of, you know, this issue in the past has, you know, and dealing with it from the federal government has, I think, been polluted by federal governments who were, you know, worried about protecting their Quebec seats and their Quebec base, and therefore the pandering started. And Mr. Harper doesn't have to do that. In fact, if he were to go there, he'd be threatening his base outside of Quebec for, you mm-hmm. know, sort of, you know, for the reasons, John, you indicated, like, who cares, right? I mean, why are you doing this? And I think, yeah, I think there's a great opportunity here. And you look at the response of the government so far, it's been pitch perfect. I mean, he sent out, you know, Christian Paradis, his Quebec minister, who basically said, well, if, you know, Ms. Marois wants to talk about economic development and jobs and in the province of Quebec, we're all ears. If, you know, she wants to talk about old fights, we're not listening.
Yeah, and I think she's got a big task cut out for her, given what her campaign promises were in terms of maintaining social services and reducing the deficit at the same time, or in some ways increasing social services. So that's going to be a challenge for her. And she also has a very, very, very slim minority, and as you said, less of the popular vote than in the last couple of elections. Mm-hmm. So she, it's not like the Parti Québécois got a very strong mandate. So another, you know, yet another reason, I think, that Quebec is not going to dominate the mm-hmm. national political agenda.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, one of her first meetings is going to be with her deputy minister of finance, and he's going to point out, you know, the implications they face fiscally by having the highest debt to GDP ratio of any province in the country while also having the highest taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Bob. You're trying, but I'm still not convinced.
No,
I don't care. Well, I mean, they're not going to separate. If they did, they would be bankrupt.
Well, but that's the point. Well, but no, but I think that's the point of what we're talking about, is that it's the media who's been trying to make this.
Yes,
out.
I agree with that. And, you know, the political landscape of Quebec and the political landscape of Canada, my prediction is we will not see the question put to referendum in her term in Quebec.
Well, oh, no. And demographically, it just isn't going to work.
I'll tell you where this cares and where I care is in the federal government payments and equalization payments that go to provinces or not even equalization, the funding from the feds to the provinces. And in the instance that Quebec will be needing money in the event that their economy is not healthy, then I care that that money isn't coming to the West. End of story. I care then.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, but when you talk about federal, you know, government money going, you know, out to the provinces through equalization, that's coming from the provinces.
It wasn't just equalization.
Yeah.
The whole scope of federal governments helping provinces, an inordinate amount goes to the East.
Yeah, well,
that I don't like and I don't care for.
Well, you know, I mean, Mr. Harper.
And if that happens now more than ever because of this threat, that I care about.
Yeah, I don't think it's a real threat.
It's not a threat.
I really don't. And, you know, another thing that's interesting is Mr. Harper probably in some ways, it fits with his vision of government. Quebec's demands, not separating, but other demands, more autonomy, fit with his vision of government, which is downloading to the province and making them more responsible. I mean, look at health, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is a man who signed the infamous firewall letter, right? And you know, when you look at what was in the letter that was written to Ralph Klein about what he should be doing and telling the federal government, he was basically suggesting that Alberta should be taking back to itself everything that Quebec had control over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're bang on, Lisa. I mean, the one thing about Quebec that Stephen Harper does get is he understands a provincial government that looks at the federal government and says, you know what? The only thing, anything you touch, you mess up. Let us take care of it. We got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back talking about politics.
From the CFAX 1070 Community Cruiser, here's what's happening.
The Ford World Men's Curling Championships are coming to Victoria next March at Save on Foods Memorial Center. Volunteers are needed. There's a rally on Sunday, September 23rd at Saanich Commonwealth Place. Light the Night happens Saturday, September 22nd at UVic's parking lot 10. Each year in communities across Canada, teams, families, friends, co-workers, and local and national corporations come together to raise funds for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada's Light the Night Walk events and bring help and hope to people battling blood cancers. The 18th annual Victoria Women's Show and Wellness Expo is Saturday, September 22nd and Sunday, September 23rd at Perks Rec Center. It's the ultimate weekend for fun and shopping, entertainment and fitness, workshops and wellness. Find out more on our website, cfax1070.com.
Watch for our Mini Cooper Clubman at local events. Sponsored by Mini Victoria and Windsor Plywood. From Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Your smile, it's your passport to the world. So if you could make your smile as dazzling as possible, wouldn't you? Today's Dental can help. From whitening and cosmetic restorations to preventative care for the whole family. From a very experienced team of dentists and hygienists, Today's Dental has everything your smile needs. Today's Dental, taking care of smiles for over 25 years. On Oak Bay Avenue near Oak Bay Junction, new patients always welcome. Call 382-5233 for an appointment or visit online at todaysdental.org. Think of the selection, the expertise. At Sawyer Sewing Center, there's a lot to think about. Sawyer Sewing Center carries all the major brands of sewing machines. Janome, Babylon, Fab, Bernina, and Elna. They have a full line of sewing machine cabinets to fit all brands. And Sawyer Sewing Center stocks a huge selection of thread and notions. Got sewing on your mind? Check online for their latest sewing classes at SawyerSewing.com on Douglas across from Uptown.
Sawyer Sewing Center.
Like us on Facebook.
Your feet take a lot of pounding, and they're attached to you. So why not visit Penna & Company and give them something really comfortable to stand on? Presenting Wellness Mats, a premium anti-fatigue floor mat so comfortable they're used stateside at the Department of Homeland Security. And you can bet they need to relax. Reduce the impact on your joints with the help of Wellness Mats. Made in the USA and available in 5 fashion-forward colors at Penna & Company in Broadmead Village.
You don't just love sports, you live sports. And CFAX 1070 knows the score. Junior, amateur, pro. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. My name's Bob Russell. I'm your host. I'm joined by my usual co-host, John Jurisic. We also have Lisa.
John, I don't care, Jurisic.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We also have Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor and community activist in the studio with us. We're talking about politics, but before we continue, John, Twitter feed.
Hashtag.
Yes.
S-U-N-A-M-P-A, Sunampa.
Okay. And what it stands for, it took me a while to get it, is Sunday AM Public Affairs.
Yeah. I tried a variety of different combinations, and that's the only one that was available.
Okay. Well, in any event.
Twitter. Yeah.
Twitter.
Yeah, Bob.
Okay, Twitter. Okay, fine. Well, as I said before, we can't promise that anything you tweet us about we'll get on air, but we can promise that it won't if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about politics. We just finished talking about Quebec. I think we concluded that it's just not going to be the issue that some people seem to want to make it in this next year. So let's talk about another sort of federal issue, which is also a big issue here in the province, and that's the Northern Gateway Enbridge pipeline proposal. Mr. Harper is very much playing hands off on this. He's waiting for the National Energy Board to report, which will not be until late in 2013. But clearly he's a supporter of the concept of moving those resources out of Northern Alberta to anyone who wants to pay top dollar for them. But it really seems, it's definitely dominating our agenda provincially. Mm-hmm. And we had some developments over the summer. We had a premier's conference where our premier laid down some conditions.
And then disappeared for 2 weeks.
Exactly. Now, and that's an interesting point. I mean, it's the boldest, other than the raising the minimum wage, it's the boldest thing that Premier Clark has done since assuming the job. Two things about it struck me. First of all, she did it in the middle of summer, when no one's paying attention, and then disappeared.
Yeah, except Gary Mason, who writes for the Globe and Mail. He's always paying attention to what she's doing.
Ah, okay.
I want to ask you a question before. Okay, yep. Mechanics of this pipeline.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So Christy Clark, we're not getting enough. Alberta's going to get billions.
Yep.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Does the common average British Columbian make money from this? If a pipeline were to come from Alberta to, what is it, Kitimat? I don't know.
Yep.
How does that work?
Yeah.
I don't get that entirely.
Okay. Well, I mean,
do any of you two know how that works?
I get a sense of how it works. I mean, that you know, what happens is that this is an interprovincial undertaking. According to, you know, 9210 of the Constitution, it can be declared a federal work, which means that, the provincial government is really in no position to benefit in any way from it, and the province to benefit in any way from it, but from the jobs that it creates.
In the building and maintenance of this thing.
Yeah.
In the building and
maintenance. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that's
my understanding.
That's it.
And do we know how many would be created in the instance of a pipeline coming across northern BC?
Well, there are numbers out there. But the reality is that it's not a whole bunch.
Well, and the reality is that it's not of long-term benefit to British Columbia.
Exactly, yeah.
And you know what struck me I am firmly opposed to the pipeline, and I can talk about why if you're interested. I think
interested.
Well, if this were the 20th century, then I think that would be a good thing to do. But I think, you know, it just like Canada built itself on fur and timber and all of our natural resources, and that's great, and that's how this country was built. But I think we need to move. The world is moving to a different kind of economy, and I think we've got the second largest oil reserves from, you know, other than Saudi Arabia in the tar sands. And that's great. Let's keep those in case we need them one day. But we have to anticipate the new economy that's happening, the green economy, the local economy, all of those things that create true prosperity. But what did so that's my take on the pipeline. But I was very interested. I have to admit, I swayed for just a moment, other than, you know, thinking of all this oil going across pristine First Nations territory in the north, with David Black's proposal to build some type of refinery in Kitimat. I thought, aha, that's interesting. Now, I'm not sure that's going to go anywhere. Are both of you, either of you, familiar?
That's not going to go anywhere.
No, it's not going to go anywhere.
But
that's the kind of thing. It is. But that's the kind of thing that would create real long-term benefit to British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still don't think that we need to be exploiting the oil sands, the tar sands, for all the reasons that I've stated. But if we were going to, then something like that, if we want to talk about economic benefit to British Columbia, something like that would produce it. But there's nothing that British Columbia will not benefit in the long term from this.
Okay.
And my prediction is that British Columbia will be detrimentally affected when the inevitable pipeline crack happens or the oil spill or whatever. Because it happens. It happened in Michigan. It will happen.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Now we're going to have some.
John
cares.
John cares
about this.
And his face is turning a slight shade of pink.
That's always that way.
Okay.
If you go to my Twitter feed, you'd see me in a suit.
Yeah. All right.
I understand all of the pieces of this thing. But from a practical perspective, most of the revenue generated from into the BC budget, the provincial budget, comes from natural resources. It is not from a new economy. It is not yet.
Not yet.
And I don't know when that'll change.
It's changing.
How can we practically not entertain this issue? This oil has to come out of Alberta to Asia. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't come through BC, it's going to come above it or below it. You would say no to that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
And so what would be the alternative if the revenue we would lose?
We British Columbia?
Yeah.
Well, we heard that British Columbia is not going to get much out of it. The revenue that Alberta would lose, that would be, you know, that would be an Alberta problem. But I think Bob has something to say and I can come back.
Well, the thing I want to say is that, you know, there are alternatives. Like, I don't understand why we're not building a pipeline from Alberta to Ontario. They import their oil. There's a lot of, and there's been a lot in the media recently from people in the resource industry saying, well, you know, Asia is paying a premium now It might not be by the time you're finished building a pipeline. There's a lot of options here, but you know, my whole sort of take on this is that you know, I think Northern Gateway is it's a straw man. It's a misdirection, and the more people like us talk about it, the more controversy there is. You know, the more the Cheshire cat grin on our prime minister's face gets broader and broader.
Why?
Because Northern Gateway is never going to happen, and to some degree, it's never been something that was going to happen. And let me explain why I think that. It goes back to a conversation I had with a a good friend from Alberta about 6 or 7 months ago, who's pretty plugged into these sort of issues, and the issue of the pipeline came up, and he sort of looked at me sort of quizzically, and he says, well, there's not going to be a Northern Gateway pipeline. You know that, right? And the light sort of went on in my head. I mean, who in their right mind, who knows anything about British Columbia, could think that they could take a pipeline, take it through unspoiled wilderness, take it through First Nations land to a port with barely navigable harbor, to take, raw bitumen out into the ocean, would be dreaming in Technicolor. What basically is going on here is that this is a misdirection for the pipeline that will look really, really good when compared to this, and that's Kinder Morgan, which is a twinning of an existing right of way coming into Burnaby, with a refinery right there, which is operating at full capacity right now, but still a refinery right there. And the prime minister is sitting there and he's going, this is wonderful. All they're doing, I mean, people will be so happy to embrace, any option. And so I think, I think Northern Gateway is just a ruse, quite frankly. Hmm. I think it's an absolute ruse. There's just absolutely and if you want to step back and just, even just not look at it from a conceptual point of view from, in its conception. I mean, we have, an opposition that in all likelihood, is going to be the next government that's just saying no. We have a government today who's sort of coming late to the party and doing everything to make their no sound better without really sounding like no. But it's basically no. So and there's all sorts of tools available to a provincial government to make it life pretty miserable, even though that there's that section 9210 in the Constitution that allows the federal government to come in and draw down the hammer. You got to ask yourself, if you're Stephen Harper and you've got options, why are you going to force this pipeline through in a province where...
So there is a ton of money being spent over this.
That's where I was going to go.
As a political manipulation? Are you kidding?
No, it's not a political manipulation.
Hey, do you agree with me, Lisa?
Well, I think if it's not going anywhere, then let's just call it now. And, not spend millions and millions of dollars with these hearings and consulting.
Wait, it's XAG, $300,000 an hour or something ridiculous like that?
$350 an hour.
A day or something? I don't know.
No, $350 an hour is what
Okay, come on, Bob. You're telling me this is a ruse for another twin pipeline?
I'm not saying there's some conspiracy somewhere.
Oh, you are.
Where someone's, there's some star chamber where somebody said, I got a great plan for how we get a pipeline through.
So what you're saying is that all this attention's being focused on the Northern Gateway, and so the twinning will just kind of go through without much protest.
Yeah, because it just looks so
preferable. Okay. In that instance, let's follow this so-called thing. In this instance, Lisa, how does that fit within your construct of no pipeline Northern BC, but working through with this? Kinder Morgan come through southern BC, is that correct?
Well, it's an existing right away.
There's already a pipeline
there.
They're just going to twin it.
So how do we deal with that issue? It doesn't have the same as up north?
Well, no, because the environmental work has already been – it's already been run through pristine wilderness. So now we'd just be running another one through pristine wilderness.
Okay, so it's already ruined.
Yeah, it's already – It's already ruined. I mean, my big picture thing is the world is changing. The world economy is changing. I mean, it's very interesting when you look at other parts of the world who are just building up to the industrial capital reality that we in the West have been living for a very long time. Of course they need oil, right? Of course they need oil, just like we needed oil and coal and all those kinds of things. And so I don't have a prediction. I don't even know if it's going to happen in my lifetime. But at a certain point in the future, and not the long-term future, there will be a time where oil is not what it is now, where either it's not getting out of the ground because of all of the other things that become more important to us, or that there are people who are forethoughtful enough to build other technologies that create jobs, energy, all of those things that oil does, but without the cost of extraction and without the environmental degradation of extraction. That is the way of the future.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't disagree with that. Where I not taking issue, but I would say that, you know, what bothers me when I look at you know, how we've developed our resources and you compare our experience to, you know, what they did in Norway, for example, you know, is a good example of how to do it very differently. What we have in those oil sands is something that the world wants right now.
Right now.
And what we're, you know, not doing, which concerns me, is we're not viewing it in a long-term strategic sense of how we could exploit what it is they want right now to in turn invest in what we'll need to be doing in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because if we become a one-legged stool of an oil economy for this nation, we will fall over at the lightest breeze. Yeah. We will.
And the reality is that we've always been a one-legged stool, you know, from the beginning.
And done pretty good. Okay, but nonetheless,
okay.
I like the tone, the vision, the energy of what you're saying. What I would like to see extracted is the anger, the bitterness, and the fighting.
Absolutely.
Over this.
Absolutely.
I would rather
agree.
Sit down with you and business and First Nations, environmentalists, actually have a constructive conversation.
Well, and say if
how
not,
come that can happen,
well,
Lisa?
Well, because
why
people,
do we have to beat up each other all the
that
time?
That is – that I do not know, and you're absolutely right, John. If all of the energy of opposition – and I have always said for my entire life, I would rather be for something than against something. Because if you're against something, you're just banging into energy and you're getting nowhere.
I can maybe answer your question, John. Historically in Canada, as a country that has never had – to create its growth, has always been able to get it from what was fortunate enough to be under its feet, either off the land or out of the land. We've never had to sit down, and this is a theme that you and I are developing and did in the first hour of the show. We've never had to sit down and come together to discuss how can we grow. Okay. What we do is we sit down and we start arguing about whether to distribute or redistribute the wealth that we have. And that's what I was coming to. But to get back to another point, and Lisa, I mean, just to follow up on what are we doing with this resource to build other resources, I mean, my view has always been that, you know, if we are a leader in carbon emissions, which we are, we should also be a leader in developing the technologies to reduce them. I mean, it's just an obvious sort of...
Absolutely. And not for the good of the planet, although that's important.
To the good
and
of
not
our
to
economy.
Feel good. For the good of our economy.
Exactly.
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 Well,
that's how you relate
Lisa's
the two
viewpoint is representing a generation that is beginning to get legs and beginning to demonstrate and verbalize its, articulate its point of view with a lot of strength. And we cannot ignore or avoid it. Yet I want to have a discussion with you around how do we replace what's already happening in a sort of a continuum from A to Z.
Yeah.
There you go. We got to go.
Very, very well put, John, even if it was said by you.
Poor John.
Look at my picture.
We're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back in a second.
For less than the cost of an apple a day, Thompson Roof Treatment can keep the roof of an average house free of moss for its remaining life. Make a healthy choice for your roof with Thompson's exclusive Lifetime Moss Control Program. A proactive approach with early treatment will maximize the life of your roof, resulting in lower maintenance costs. Call Thompson Roof Treatment and ask about their Lifetime Moss Control Program. Protect your roof and its warranty with Thompson Roof Treatment. 385-3124. 385-3124.
a Makeson Fitzpatrick Insurance Community Update.
On October 25th, join us at the McPherson Playhouse for an electrifying double bill of Alex Kuba and Kuba Ohms, performing for Hope, Help, and Home. All funds raised go to Community Living Victoria in support of people with developmental disabilities. As a community partner, Makeson Fitzpatrick reminds you, tickets for this sensational night of music are on sale now at the Mac Box office.
At Makeson Fitzpatrick, our mission is to improve the lives of our clients, team, and community. To learn more, visit MakesonFitzpatrick.com.
Thrifty Foods is celebrating its 35th anniversary, and we're kicking it off with a big birthday celebration giveaway. Receive a giveaway ticket every time you go through our tills, and receive bonus tickets when you purchase specially marked items. Every ticket is a winner, and there are $350,000 in prizes. Thrifty Foods, celebrating 35 years of smiles.
I don't look old enough to be a grandmother.
Great grandmother.
What makes a family? A mom.
I need a way to change my daughter's life.
Two dads.
You would feed the child and bathe them.
What would you do?
Me? I'm the fun dad.
And a grandmother.
You are not growing one of her kind of eggs in my granddaughter.
Oh, no, sweetie, these are poached.
Different is the new normal.
A family is a family, and love is love.
CTV's The New Normal. New series starts tomorrow at 10.
Level Ground Trading. Local, direct, delicious.
What does being local mean to you? My name is Stacy Taves, and I co-founded Level Ground Trading 15 years ago. We embody what it means to be local. We're a zero-waste facility, sending nothing to Heartland, utilizing 13 streams of recycling and compost. We pay our staff to cycle to work on the peninsula, and we sponsor hundreds of local nonprofit groups each year. That's what being local means to me.
Come enjoy Level Ground's delicious coffee, paired with the abundant selection of amazing local food, September 16th at Feast of Fields.
CFAX 1070 is where Victoria turns first for local news, weather, and traffic, with more news than ever before. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria News Authority. My name is Bob Russell. I'm in the studio with John Jurisic and Lisa Helps, and we've been talking about politics. Okay, so we've solved the Quebec issue. So we'll put that to sleep. We've talked about pipelines development, resource development, you know, and bridging the gap between the old
people who yell at each other.
People who yell at each other, exactly.
Yeah. Tired of that.
Okay, which I think is good. So but speaking of people who yell at each other, let's talk about provincial politics. We've got an election, as everyone knows, in May. We have a government which is being for some time electorally challenged going to May. The government shuffled its cabinet on this week. Did so as a result of a number of people leaving, senior cabinet ministers, not inconsequently people who, like Kevin Falcon, who finished second to Ms. Clark in the leadership race, and Mr. Abbott, who finished, I think it was third or fourth, actually, I think it was third. And they're leaving. Well, you know, Mr. Abbott seems to have been pretty definitive about the fact that he's leaving. It was... You know, Mr. Falcon just seemed to be leaving the door open. In any event, you know, are we just going to get, picking up the theme from our last segment, are we just going to get these people yelling at each other for the next 5 or 6 months? Or is anyone really paying attention? Or has everyone already decided what they're going to vote? Is there any chance for anyone other than the NDP to win the next election?
Interestingly enough, the three people in here, we have a politician, we have a political pundit, and we have a political backroom person. Mm. I've been in the so-called mysterious backroom for the better part of 30 years. Yeah. Well, what happens in the back room?
As of
right? yeah. You and I have been there.
Yeah.
The business, the ideology of politics becomes very mechanical in the back room. Mm-hmm. It comes down to...
pulses in the room.
It comes down to counting votes. It comes down to knowing who's going to vote. Mm-hmm. and how they're going to vote. Mm-hmm. And for the better part of 30 years, mm-hmm. we, outside of a few anomalies, mm-hmm. have the same percentage breakdown in our provincial election all the time. Mm-hmm. It's essentially the free enterprise side at about 45% to 50%. And the NDP side at somewhere between 40% to 45%. We're actually only talking about a 10% swing that puts people into government.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And so that's really what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. Not the polls that this – it's capturing that point. The anomalies have been when the right mm-hmm. or the left have split. Mm-hmm. And that percentage breaks. Mm-hmm. There was an anomaly at the first time Gordon Campbell was elected that was a 60-30 split, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most significant issue that has impacted the election in May this past week was not this cabinet shuffle, mm-hmm. was the fact that the Conservative Party are eating themselves for breakfast, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. therefore solidifying that free enterprise vote back to that historical place. People are fatigued with this Liberal Party. Mm. They don't particularly like Christy Clark. However, De Jong, Coleman, Stilwell, that's three out of the five, including Christy, three out of the five mm-hmm. Candidates for the leadership are still there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not a done deal.
Okay.
And when you start to look at how this plays down, not by constituency – this is not an NDP win by de facto. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to earn it.
Yeah, Lisa?
And they should.
It's interesting. So what you're saying, John, then, is that because the Conservative Party is arguably imploding, or to use your words, eating itself for breakfast, the free enterprise vote, as you call it, is consolidating again or will consolidate again around the Liberals. Is that...
Correct, or against the NDP.
Against the NDP, right. So, but do you think that the Conservative Party was actually going to be a force to be reckoned with?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. But
they don't have to take that much of a percentage to make a difference.
As the three of us know, there's one thing about polling, and there's one thing about actually getting somebody elected. Yeah. And these poor Conservatives party... don't have people on the ground. They don't have the backroom people. They don't have their vote identified. They don't have volunteers. They mm-hmm. don't have candidates.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what makes me question.
And
what
on
makes
top of
me
that,
question.
They're starting to fight.
Yeah.
And so,
internally with
right?
each other.
So if you're – what I think we're going to see is we're going to start to see De Jong. We're going to start to see Coleman. Some of these other cabinet ministers start to take the front end and talk about how, oh my gosh, this BC Jobs Plan is starting to work, mm-hmm. which is what happened – a couple days ago.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, these were spokespeople for the government when the Liberals started to go into the decline under Gordon Campbell. You know, it was back then that, you know, the Conservative Party was created. I mean, for, you know, arguably driven first by, you know, not so much the carbon tax is how our former premier decided to introduce the carbon tax, which is just say, here it is. Love it or leave it. And then we had the whole HST debacle. I mean, these people
which resulted, I mind you, in a 55-45 vote.
Yep.
That was barely passed. Perhaps one of the biggest political issues of the past 35 years, barely, but was beaten.
But, John, the thing I would say about it, and I think, as you know, I mean, I was a supporter of the HST at a much lower rate. You know, harmonized taxes just make sense. But whatever the outcome was of the vote, what people remember was they were forced to have to vote, and they were forced to have to deal with it because of the degree to which the introduction of the tax had been so poorly managed
well,
by the government.
You know what I think? I all of this analysis, 45-45, free enterprise, NDP side, that's all very interesting, and there's lots of weight to put there. But I think the reason that the Liberals have gone into a tailspin is because with the introduction of the HST very soon after an election promising that it wouldn't be introduced, Gordon Campbell and his party fundamentally broke trust with their constituents and you know, with the rest of the people in the province. And people don't necessarily trust Christy Clark. and her party. So I think what we're talking about, what we can talk about, and I know we got to go to a commercial break probably, is an issue of trust. Yes. That is where people are going to go.
Okay, let's do that. We'll be talking about trust when we come back from our commercial break.
If you have trees, shrubs, or soil, then you need the expertise of Bartlett Tree Experts. Now, tree tips from Bartlett.
As we venture out into our yards and gardens over the next few months, the results of pest and disease damage become apparent. Before you see the damage, it is advisable to have an arborist inspect your plants and trees, and often the issues can be solved through traditional or organic treatments, ensuring the health of your investment. For the tree company with local knowledge and global resources, visit Bartlett.com or call 1-877-BARTLETT.
Are you having problems with paparazzi? Do you have deer eating away your gardens? Maybe you just want to spruce up your driveway entrance. Harbor Door installs a full line of driveway gates and entry systems. Automated gates are custom designed and unique to your property, adding attractive architectural detail, privacy, and security. Harbor Door has been installing gate systems for over 25 years and has the expertise to coordinate all the details from start to finish. For all your garage door or gate needs, call Harbor Door or visit online at harbordoor.com.
I just got the Samsung Galaxy S2 from Virgin Mobile, and because I'm a member, I also get exclusive access and deals from awesome brands like West 49. So not only did I get a new smartphone, I got a new hoodie too. A super cozy hoodie. Does your phone keep you cozy? Didn't think so.
Virgin Mobile members get smartphones from $0 like the Samsung Galaxy S2, plus exclusive access and deals like up to $20 off at West 49. Visit a Virgin Mobile store or virginmobile.ca for details. It's better to be a member.
If you have trees, shrubs, or soil, then you need the expertise of Bartlett Tree Experts. Now, tree tips from Bartlett.
As we venture out into our yards and gardens over the next few months, the results of pest and disease damage become apparent. Before you see the damage, it is advisable to have an arborist inspect your plants and trees, and often the issues can be solved through traditional or organic treatments, ensuring the health of your investment. For the tree company with local knowledge and global resources, visit Bartlett.com or call 1-877-BARTLETT.
Shop, spin, and win with Save-On Foods for a chance to win a Caribbean cruise for four and more great prizes. Plus, get fresh Western Family outside round oven roast, aged at least 14 days and guaranteed tender. Buy one, get one free. Or 2-liter bottles of Coke. Card price, 10 for $10. Visit Save-On Foods and shopandspin.com for complete details. Save-On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
Your fair weather and not so fair weather friends. With a forecast you can count on. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm in the studio with John Jurisic and Lisa Helps. My name's Bob Russell. We're just going to go into our last segment here and sum up what we've been talking about provincial politics. Lisa, you wanted to talk about trust.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like kind of an airy-fairy topic, but I think it's not. People can, leaders and parties can have the best platforms, the best laid plans, but if people on the ground, citizens, voters, don't trust that party and in particular that leader to implement their plans, aka as we saw with the HSC, that will, you know what that will do actually? That will bring voter turnout down. And I think that we will see over the, and we're already seeing it, voter turnout down, 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 because, you know, whatever, we'll elect these people, but we don't really trust them to do what they say they're going to do. And I think that there's, so this is, this goes beyond party politics altogether. And what it goes to is how can politicians regain the trust of voters? Well, and that will make voters come out, and that will change how elections turn out.
Well, and it's interesting. You look at the Liberals and taking what you've just said, I mean, you can understand how that comes into play there. We had in Gordon Campbell someone who had a new or different direction every week, new or different priority all the time. Things were constantly changing. And then, you know, again, the whole HST debacle, quite aside from, you know, whether it was a good tax or a bad tax, the policy issue was just if there was ever a mismanagement of an issue, that was it. And now we've got, you know, Premier Clark who started off with a family's agenda. I used to like to say to, you know, distinguish her from all those political parties who are anti-family. You know, and she's been casting around, you know, looking for something. I mean, you know, the criticism has been that, you know, she just sort of strikes you as someone who just wanted the job, not for any particular reason, just wanted the job. And so we have that trust reaction going on there. But on the other side of the equation, we've got a new Democrat Party. And all we know about what they would do if they were the government is we know from his leadership race that Adrian Dix would impose a tax on banks – oh, that would be unpopular – to fund student assistance. That's it.
And we
know they're against the Gateway Pipeline.
Yeah. I know.
Well, we're still at the issue place.
We are.
Okay?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, Lisa, you know, but my experience has been the free enterprise vote, that core free enterprise vote, does not vote NDP.
And they never will.
Correct. What they will do is not vote.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the NDP vote will always vote, that core vote will always passionately vote NDP.
Wow.
We are talking about a 10% of the population that is influenced by trust, by incompetence, by lack of vision. Mm-hmm. That's who we're going after. I found it quite fascinating, the political pundits for the American coverage of these two
conventions.
Thank you.
Yep.
that in fact, yeah, thank you. I'm getting so excited here. Yep. That in fact the entire convention was to try to go after two states.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Two swing states.
Exactly.
Either Minnesota or Michigan and Ohio.
Yeah.
That's
right.
And
yeah.
That's going to call
Michigan and
that's
Ohio.
That's very similar to BC. Essentially, when you go into the back room and close the door, if a party in this province wins the majority of seats in Vancouver and the majority of seats in the what they call, you know, Kelowna area and the north, their government. The entire island will go inevitably NDP. Your points are well taken. But when it comes down to the voting booth, you're going after a small percentage of swing voters who, I agree with you, Lisa, are fatigued and are angry and are fed up with
this
current
government. Then what that's going to lead to, and you know, one of my colleagues at Community Microlending says his problem with electoral politics is that we, you know, we'll elect one party for 10 years and they'll do some things and then another party will come in that has a very, you know, slightly different mandate because they have to appeal to, you know, people with common sense and they'll do some slightly different things. And so we're not actually, going back to our earlier conversation nationally, British Columbia is not innovating. We're not becoming leaders in, you know, in new economy, in green jobs, in all of those things. Because why? We have one party and then another party. And they're not all that different. I mean, like, I'm curious to see what is the NDP's actual platform going to be beyond the two things that you mentioned. And I mean, what I think, again, like, I'm casting my eyes 30 years. And I think 30 years from now, we will see. And again, this is going to sound like I'm, you know, some whatever. younger generation. We will see.
Oh,
we will
youngins.
No, but we will see. I think we will see the Green Party of British Columbia play. It sounds ridiculous now, but we'll come back 30 years and we'll, you know, play a much more interesting, much more interesting role in BC politics.
Lisa, actually, it won't be 30 years. Your time is now.
Yeah.
This generation's time is now.
Yeah.
We need to start to listen to your point of view. And I am adamant about that.
Because the Green Party of British
Columbia. We're all fatigued with what's going on.
Well, the Green Party of British Columbia is very interesting. I mean, and I'm not a member of any political party, but they are very fiscally conservative. Yeah. They are looking at job creation. They are looking at local economies. They are looking at all of those things in a very new way that's not tied to this way or that way. And they, I think, have lots of room to come up the middle or off to some side because they've got new ideas that aren't either this or that. And
who knows? I agree with you conceptually.
I agree with myself conceptually as well.
Aren't we all happy here?
I mean, all you need to do is look at Europe and the role the Green Party plays in Europe.
Yes.
Now, it has a number of advantages. The electoral system is different. Mm-hmm. It's proportional representation.
Yep.
So as a result, they get elected.
Same with New Zealand.
Yep. They get members.
Yep.
And so they have a voice. But the one thing that you know, really distinguishes them in those countries compared to how they are perceived.
Perceived, yep.
Is that they are very, very big economic players.
Yes.
And they are really leading in terms of the economic development discussions
and, yes.
and the growth discussions. You know, and you know, I've looked at sort of the, you know, the green platform here and some of their ideas regarding business and the economy, and I agree with you. You know, I mean, they are the innovators. The problem is that I just, you know, they're not perceived that way.
I know. It's a perception problem.
And you know, I got to think that part of the reason they're not perceived that way is because their messengers don't come across as having any credibility on
mm-hmm.
those issues.
Mm-hmm.
John, what do you think?
Well, I think the collective body of policy around creating fiscally responsible economic development and policies yeah. needs to belong to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's call it the People Party,
yeah.
for frig's sakes. You know, like okay, so this there is a yearning and a real desire for this,
mm-hmm.
and you're speaking to that, Lisa. We need our current politicians to speak to that. Adrian Dix is a brilliant politician. I think he knows exactly what's going on, and he knows exactly what I'm talking about mm-hmm. and how all this stuff breaks down. He's going to be very hard to beat.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Christy Clark understands what you're saying?
I think members of her cabinet do.
Well, that was very diplomatic.
Yeah.
John Jurisic, diplomat.
However, I've not spoken to her directly, nor has yeah. she made any attempt to hear my point of view. Why should she?
I won't be diplomatic.
I'll tell you one thing. Yeah. I am tired of hearing Vancouver and mainland folks being in the center of all these discussions.
Yeah.
There are other parts of BC that matter.
Yeah,
well, big time.
I'm not as diplomatic as you, John, and I don't think she would have the faintest idea what you're talking about.
Mm, we need to
the other shift that I think that you know the Green Party may or may not get, but that I think is related to this discussion is the desire, and this you know this is not necessarily the way that the NDP thinks about it, but is the desire for small government, right? And why? Because communities have lots of capacity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've got about a minute left. Maybe we can sum it up. I mean,
give it a shot.
Let's give it a shot. Well, but I mean,
we
I
have
mean,
9 months.
Are we basically? I think what one of the things we're saying is that it's probably the NDP's to lose.
Absolutely.
I mean, that John, going back to your number crunching, it's like that. If they play their cards right, if they appeal
they're
to
the
that
new government.
Swing vote. In other words, if they don't make mistakes and they target that swing vote, there's probably nothing the Liberals can do, even in a collapse of the Conservative Party, to do anything about
Correct.
It.
Correct.
Okay.
Because the issues that Lisa brought up are too strong to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be too strong to overcome.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
were a lot of screw-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Lisa, one quick comment?
Yeah, my comment is that my hope is that people will get engaged, and I agree with John's analysis, 10% swing vote, but I think that there is a whole series of people who are yet to be reckoned with who have maybe never cast a vote in their lifetime, and those are my generation and the generation that's a bit younger than me, and that will determine. If those people get out and vote, that will change things and that will shake things up. Now, how do we make that happen? We yeah. shall see.
Well, you know,
we're going to bring them on the show.
If you had an answer to that question, Lisa, you would be, you know, you would have the key to unlocking an issue that's been in politics forever. In any event, folks, that's all the time we have.
Oh, that's
I want to thank all our guests from the first hour: Terry Stewart, Ken Lewis, and Gary Lunn. Lisa, as always, it's wonderful to see you and
thank
have you in the studio, and we hope to have you back often, John.
Yeah, National Football League.
Okay, fine. I think that's enough.
Metrolex.